Hello and welcome to the November edition of Haven Rugby League Fans Podcast, brought to you by Trust in Haven, the Whitehaven Independent Supporters Trust. It's off season. You might think things are quiet, but lots happening at the recreation ground and indeed in the wider game. And it's to that end it's in that direction we're going to point our podcast this morning. As always, I've got my just to say fair play, I've got Haven fan in exile from Radcliffe. We've got Paul Stubbs with us. Morning, Paul.
Morning, everybody.
As our guest in this November edition of the Haven Rugby League Fans Podcast, we've got a real scoop here today. I'm quite sure how we've managed to do it, but we've actually got the voice of rugby league on BBC television in the shape of Matt Newsome joining us. Good morning, Matt. Welcome along.
Yeah, good morning. I have to rephrase that. I'm actually Dave Woods' bag carrier. So there we go. Yeah. I'm his little apprentice. I polish his shoes and take his washing to the laundrette and that. So yeah.
We've got Matt with us this morning, and I'm sure he'll have lots of things to share with us and things to talk about. But first and foremost, Matt, I just went back to your X profile, or your Twitter profile as it used to be, and on there you say that you're a rugby league nerd from the East Midlands, but now living in the North. How does someone from the East Midlands end up being rugby league commentator on national television? Just give us a bit of background how you came to be there, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in Nottingham. My mum and dad are from Nottingham. My dad worked with a guy from Oldham, and every year they would make the pilgrimage down to Wembley for the Challenge Cup final. And I don't think my dad, even though he went to some of the best finals of all time, he recording stopped, does it?
Okay. Carry on, yeah.
No worries. So my dad worked with a guy from Oldham, and he was a rugby league nut. And so my dad every year would make that kind of annual pilgrimage with a big coach full of workmates down to Wembley for the Challenge Cup finals. And he saw some terrific finals. I say saw in inverted commas because I think he was absolutely bladdered. So I don't think he saw much of any of them. But he was at, Featherstone Hull 83. He was at, the great Wigan Hull final of 85, and a couple of others throughout the 80s. And he might have been at the All Hull one, but I think he might have just missed out on that one. But, he went to some great Wembley finals. And despite that, though, he wasn't actually a massive rugby league fan. So my introduction to it was, like a lot of people, Saturday afternoon, grandstand, that would be on. You get the second half of, a John Player Trophy game or a Regal Trophy match or whatever. And then obviously with the Challenge Cup rounds, and then you'd get the occasional sort of league game on. So you'd kind of get introduced to it through that. So kind of discovery of rugby league was through TV, and which is kind of, I guess, apt in the sense that that's kind of something that I do now. The Ray French and Maurice Bamford, Ray French and later Joe Lydon, Ray French and Jonathan Davis, as we kind of went a little bit further along, and Peter Fox and people like that, those voices, although I didn't really understand who they were at the time, were a big part of kind of my discovery of my enjoyment of rugby league. And brilliant. I went to university right down the south coast in Bournemouth. And so I lost a little bit of touch with rugby league for a couple of years. But then when I came back towards the Midlands and then further north, I've kind of lived on the outskirts of rugby league most of my life. And yet it's still kind of something I'm really passionate about. So I moved up to Newcastle. And from there, I started to kind of dip my toe in back in with the Thunder stuff. And then from there, it kind of progressed to, doing a bit of Super League, doing a bit more Championship stuff before that, then a bit of Super League. And then from Super League onwards, it's kind of sort of snowballed into what is today. So, yeah, I work for sort of BBC TV, BBC Radio, covering rugby league for across the board. It's kind of weird beginnings. I'm sort of jealous of a few of my peers who grew up with a team right next door, whether it be a Saints or Cat or a Warrington or whatever. I'm often a little bit jealous of that, but at the same time, I think it's nice to be a little bit of an outlier sometimes, and you feel like you're sort of spreading the gospel to some extent.
Yeah, very good, very good. Yeah. I say always look forward to your commentaries and seeing the Babes output on rugby league. I think it's sort of you made a good point there. You actually developed an interest in rugby league through the BBC, and I think the advent of Sky took that away to a large extent, and you're by no means the first person who's actually made that sort of comment to me about the enjoyed watching rugby league Saturday afternoons on the Beeb. So I think it's good we've actually managed to address that somewhat. I mean, Sky still have the major saying, but I think the Beeb has got a bit more coverage and done a bit more coverage on terrestrial, and to me that's important, and that's good, and the game can only benefit from it. So yeah, so interesting comment there. So in terms of Whitehaven Rugby League, Matt, I think I can remember you covering some Whitehaven games for the Sunday afternoon sports show on Radio Cumbria over the years. Can you remember the first time you covered a Whitehaven game?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the actual, I think the first time I went there was covering Thunder for BBC Newcastle, Radio Newcastle. And I just loved it. You know, that big cop that goes up to the town, the little snack bar at the top, and, you know, the kind of driving down that little road that you kind of, past that club on the right, don't you?
Yeah.
And then you get to the ground. And I really loved that. It felt like proper rugby league, because you can kind of get a bit sort of sanitized turning up at like the DW or Huddersfield or something. Whereas this is a genuine rugby league ground. And what I loved was that, you know, that the football posts, as you were driving past recreation grounds on the way into, you know, kind of West Cumbria, they stopped being football posts and they start being rugby league posts. And that's when you think, like, this is proper rugby league territory. And I always got, for somebody who's not from rugby league territory, I always got a really warm glow coming in thinking, nah, this is proper. Like, this is, you could see somebody walking down the street here in like a Newcastle Knights top or, you know, Gold Coast Titans hoodie or something. This is how much they love rugby league in this part of the world. So yeah, I've had some fond memories of going over that way. I remember seeing Zach Hardacre score, it must have been like 80 meter try down the right hand side against Whitehaven for Featherstone, and thinking this guy could be special. And then like a couple of years down the line, he was scoring a try in a grand final for Leeds Rhinos. So I've always enjoyed, I don't cover as much of it these days, but
no,
I really enjoyed covering the championship. I think it's a great league with some proper clubs in it, you know, Bax and Fev and the two, you know, obviously there's three Cumbrian clubs, but the West Cumbrian clubs, you know, Whitehaven and Workington. I've always really enjoyed that. I've only been to one derby, and that, I have to admit, that was at Derwent Park. So I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I love that. I love my trips over to West Cumbria.
Brilliant, brilliant. Yeah, I mean, so as I say, it's great to know you've got that, or you've made that link and got that, what's the word, affection, for the game. And I think it's good that a person like yourself who's obviously spreading the game has got that understanding and that appreciation of what West Cumbria is about in terms of rugby league. So brilliant, man. Just you touched on there. Obviously, you were living in the northeast when you first kicked things off. You were covering Thunder. Was it Gateshead Thunder then?
Yeah. It was Gateshead Thunder. So it was the back end of Dave Wood's time in charge.
Yeah.
And then Chris Hood took over, and
yes,
then partway through the season, obviously someone who's, you know, well known to West Cumbrian, you know, people, Steve McCormack came in, and I mean, I really enjoyed working with all the people at Thunder, but Chris Hood in particular, I still sort of catch up with every now and then now, and every time I see Steve McCormack, it's great to catch up with him. He was such a nice bloke,
and
the team that they put together at Thunder Yeah. That back end of 2009 was really, it was a really good team. I mean, they, obviously, the Lee would have gone down had everything the run not been pulled out away from Thunder. And, you know, they finished that season with a terrific run of games. They beat Barrow, I think it was on Bank Holiday Monday. You know, they knocked off some top teams in the championship that year towards the back end when they started to get into their run of form. And they, you know, signed a couple of ex-NRL players. Paul Franz came in. Russ Aitken, who played in a grand NRL grand final, he came in. And they were like loads of local. I think there was a, there was a Cumbrian in that team, wasn't there? Stuart Sanderson, and he was...
That's right. Ex-Woth
Grow. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that. And I, what I, enjoy, I mean... What I love about rugby league, even at the top level, is that they, you can have a rapport with the coaches and you can have a rapport with the players, and they're good, they're good people, and they're largely approachable and want to kind of engage and spread the word, you know, do the media stuff. And what I really enjoyed about Thunder, and I think the same would apply to Whitehaven, and I know like John Cox used to have a great relationship with the people at Whitehaven, so. To name just one person. So what I, you know, yeah, really, I really enjoyed that side of it, that, that kind of covering a club and feeling part of, you know, the kind of community around it. And that's even though now I cover various clubs and I don't stick to just one, I still feel there's that sense of, you know, that you can be part of something wider when you go in the cover rugby league. But yeah, those Thunder days were really good education, and actually some of the people you meet there you end up catching up with a lot further down the line, so it was a really good grounding. So
I mean, obviously, you know, with it's been a lot gone on in just in the last few months in the championship, Thunder have been one of the big news features, not for the good reasons. So what do you make of the current situation over on the northeast with Thunder and that? They look like they're trying their best to carry on. Can you add any more to that? What's your view on the situation?
Well, I think it's like Icarus, isn't it? They aimed for the you know, they aimed for the stars, and they got their wings burned. And I think that when Thunder have been a really positive influence is when they've been had people at the core of it. And I'm not saying that the people at, who've been at there haven't had that kind of care and kind of attention to detail. But the way that they're looking to rebuild the club is with people who have picked up the pieces before. So it's people like Keith Christie. It's people like Jordan Robinson, Keith Christie in particular. He there's some sort of MBE to rugby league because he's been there every time that things have gone wrong with Thunder. Back when obviously the aforementioned season where Lee were relegated and Thunder stayed up in the championship, and then the kind of money, the funding was withdrawn by the ownership, and they decided they didn't want to carry on. Keith Christie was there along with Chris Hood, and they picked up the pieces, and you know, they saw them getting hammered every week and kind of tried to rebuild the club. And with the fact that they're involved again in what they hope is going to kind of bring kind of Thunder Mark, whatever it is, Mark 20 or whatever, that they hope to kind of restore to League One. I mean, it will be a more sustainable club. And I think that has to be the key. I mean, what they tried to do, I think, was really admirable. But if you're an outlying club where you're 2.5 hours away from some of the kind of heartland areas, you're probably an hour and a half away, if not two, from other heartland areas, even like Leeds or somewhere like that, Leeds or Wakefield or Castleford, you've got to pay over the odds if you're going to attract people.
Exactly.
Because they can't, you know, you have these car shares, don't you, between Lancashire and Yorkshire, you know, the Yorkshire bus or whatever, or the Lancashire bus. We can't do that if it's Newcastle. You can't have five people piling into a, you know, Ford Escort or whatever, a Ford Focus or something. It just doesn't work. It's not going to work like that. So you can sort of see that a lot of the things that they would have tried to do, if they'd put that kind of investment into Dewsbury or something, it would probably have worked because they had, you know, geographical advantage. But
that's
when you are so far north and you are having to kind of offer extra incentives, it just becomes an unsustainable situation. And they are still, I mean, I think there's a lot to be admired about Thunder and what they've done, particularly in the community programs, trying to get young people
yes.
in the Northeast playing rugby league, boys, girls, at schools. That community program has been fantastic. And there is a growing kind of community game in the Northeast, but it's nowhere near enough to sustain, to produce the player pool that Thunder need to rely on. They've worked really hard to kind of break into the student union rugby league market. So they've done, you know, and the Northumbria University team has been really successful. So they are attracting students. They were attracting students, and I'm sure they will. Talented rugby league players who come for an education in the Northeast have a decent level of rugby league to play, and then Thunder was a pathway to potentially joining the professional game. So I think they did that really well. But I think the moment that they hit this kind of Super League sort of trajectory, I think it just became unsustainable. And I think that's probably been borne out by what's happened. So if they go back to basics and become a really good League One club that produces players, maybe moves them on, and then the kind of that goes to fund the operation. Yeah, it's not particularly kind of ambitious. But it could be ambitious if they get the right, you know, if they get the right personnel that comes through, the crop of players that comes
small
through.
Small steps to start with, maybe, yeah.
Success. Yeah. But yeah, I think they just need to be a good club, understand what they are, a club that's, kind of a non-heartland club that's doing a lot of good things for the game. And their success should be, well, this guy went to St. Helens Academy and then played first grade. This guy went to Huddersfield Academy and played first grade.
Which they have had a few like that.
And we've got some decent players that fill our team, and we try to be competitive. And then if that succeeds, then they can take the next steps. And I think that's probably the way they'll go. I think that's probably the way they'll go. I mean, West Cumbrian, you must realise it must be very similar for Whitehaven, I guess, in terms of, even though you are in a hotbed, you know, you kind of have to sort of temper ambitions a bit sometimes, perhaps. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it is. I think what you just said for Newcastle is a brilliant business plan. You bring on the youngsters, sell them on. It's a business plan. And unfortunately, rugby league, as Dave will agree probably, and there's no money in it now, and you need a business plan. And unfortunately, teams are falling by the wayside for not having that business plan.
I'm just
going to bring up another kick in the teeth for the area, Newcastle-wise, is they've lost the Magic Weekend this year.
Mm.
Next year.
Yeah, that's a backward step, would I say.
Very backward step.
The rugby league have other aims and objectives they're trying to meet, and Newcastle's been sacrificed to help them achieve them, haven't they?
To be honest with you, I've just read something now. And I've just pulled it up on my phone that it wasn't actually the rugby league, it was Newcastle Football Club that didn't want them to play there.
The ground wasn't available when they wanted to play.
Well, the new owners don't want them to play on it.
Right. That's a shame. Yeah. Anyway, Matt, just coming back to yourself. Obviously, as I say, served your apprenticeship, did your time on radio commentary. What was your first televised game? What was your first commentary game on television?
I did an England friendly against France, the one where Tom Johnson scored a hat trick. I did that for our league, and that was end of 2018 season.
Yeah,
so that was my first time I'd done something that was specifically for a kind of TV audience, but it wasn't strictly TV. But my BBC call-up came back end of that year. Dave Woods came to see me and said, look, we've got a World Cup coming and we need to broaden our pool of commentators. And
yeah, brilliant.
He asked me who I thought could make the step up, and he said, I kind of put your name forward. Are you keen? And I was, of course. It's a bit like, like £1 million pounds. Yeah, I'd love it. Yeah. So, I then had a conversation with the kind of executive producer of Rugby League at the BBC, a guy called Ali. And he was like, look, we're keen to give you a crack. So I shadowed Dave for a couple of games, and then I met all the team around it. So, people in the trucks.
Yes.
Direct it, and people who run through the high, I met sort of everybody in the team, and then they finally gave me a crack. I did a Halifax Bradford in the Challenge Cup, so obviously Bradford knocked Leeds out, didn't they? And
that's right, and then they had the next,
I think it was the quarter final.
Yeah.
Oddsall between Bradford and Halifax. So you've got West Yorkshire Derby, two championship clubs. And I was really excited, really nervous. You know, you kind of get that bit where team when the team's in the tunnel, you know, I mean, you're almost in the same boat because that's when you know that you're going to be handed to. So the minute they start walking and all their emotions are swirling, so are mine. So, you know, kind of you can hear, like, you know, I can't remember who was on that day. It might have been like Jamie Jones Buchanan or something wrapping up his point. And then you know that Mark Chapman or Tanya Arnold or whoever is going to say, right, now let's get to our teams are on the way out. Let's get to our commentary team. And it's blah, 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 blah. And then you go, Matt Newsome. And I just had this, like, kind of almost perpetual fear that I was going to just lose my voice, not be able to say anything. it kind of blurted it out probably at 100 miles an hour, like, ball of nerves. So that was my introduction. It was a really good game, loads of tries. Yeah. But poor old Rowan Milnes broke his leg, and he was sort of sat down in the pitch, and the medical staff were around him, and it was like 1 minute, 2 minutes, still talking, 4 minutes, you know, 5 minutes, seven minutes passes. You know, it was probably about 8 minutes or something, like the delay. But you know when you're like there and you can't go back to the studio. Yeah. And you're like chatting to your pundits, but I can't remember how it must have been like 20 minutes in. So it's not like you had like a kind of half an hour or an hour's worth of the game to kind of reflect on. It's like, what? I it would be painful to watch it back now because goodness knows how we put all that time. But it was, you know, if you're going to get like a baptism of fire, then you might as well get it in your first game, get it out of the way, and hopefully you can kind of deal with it better.
Well, that's when you start talking about the pies and the coffee and what have you, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. What else are we going to do? And obviously, they can't reflect on the incident too much because it might be gruesome or. We quite swiftly realised it wasn't a head injury or something like that. It wasn't going to be something that was going to be potentially, you know, fatal or, you know, kind of have any lasting implications. So, you know, it was unfortunate, a broken leg, but at least it wasn't something that they couldn't show the replay of, or, you know, and you could at least say, oh, well, that looked pretty innocuous. You know, it's really unfortunate for him and talking about, yeah. So, yeah, whatever the digression was, but that was a really good way of sort of pitching you into it. And also, when you've been chatting then for like between yourselves for like 8 minutes, the game, you kind of almost, it's a bit like you've warmed yourself up by that point. So hopefully from that point onwards, it was much better. But yeah, that feels like quite a long time ago now. But it was some introduction.
Pretty good.
Thankfully, it was a really good game. So, you know, and a couple of Halifax fans have messaged me and said, you know, I mean, I don't think my commentary was particularly good, but they will remember that commentary because it's their beat a rival and they made the semi-finals of the Challenge Cup. So a couple of Halifax fans have said to me, oh, I'll still listen to that. I'll still watch that, the highlights of that game. And that gives you a buzz because even, you know, that was for me, like what I used to do. And, you know, I'd be running around my house, like, you know, doing very French impressions. Oh, he's going for the line. if somebody was out ever like kind of replicating something that I'd said, then that would be the ultimate buzz. So, yeah.
Yeah. So you've a few seasons experience under your belt now, Matt. What's been the standout game you've called, would you say?
Oh, I was really lucky. I mean, for the World Feed, the World Cup last year, Andrew Voss did the Australia semi-final, but for BBC, and so anybody watching in this country, I did Australia and New Zealand in the semi-finals last year for BBC in this country.
Yes.
And that is, I mean, I went to, sound like I'm really bragging here, but me and my mate went on a trip to Australia back in 2018. I went to State of Origin game two, and I'm a New South Wales man, so the Blues won the series at what is now, I'm not sure what Accor Stadium or whatever, you know, the Olympic Stadium basically at Homebush. And I had forever after that said, that is the best game of rugby league I've ever seen. I didn't look away at any point. It was just completely transfixed. It was such a war of, you know, attrition and quality and everything. But that game absolutely blew, that semi-final between Australia and New Zealand blew
Origin
out of the water. I thought it was a phenomenal game of rugby league. So, yeah, that would probably be it. But I mean, sometimes I just come away from, you know, regular Super League games and think, oh, that was crap, that was cracking, or that was class, or whatever. And I think sometimes it's in the moment. But I did think, I thought that semi final was probably peerless. I think
He was everything that rugby league was about, wasn't it? You know,
yeah,
physical, skillful, quick, yeah. So, great. As I say, some great memories to draw on. Obviously, there's a new television contract coming up, Matt. Sky are going to be showing every game. Will that be making any difference to the BBC's coverage? Will we still be seeing the Super League show in 2024?
As far as I know, I think the whole thing was up for tender again. I know that the kind of current, I think the Super League show should continue on the BBC or some a highlights program of some sort will continue. I'm not privy to, you know, who the thing is that at the moment the Super League show is produced for the BBC by an independent company. And I think, you know, they're very keen to retain it. I think that it does have, you know, people would like to see different things, perhaps different ways of approaching it. But in terms of, as far as I know, there'll be the same kind of output next year. What I would love to see, and this is me just talking as a punter, I'd love to see the BBC have a crack at the free to air contract. But I mean, the way that the BBC now is kind of running its live sport, there's a big focus on kind of highlights, and there's a big focus on online rights.
Yeah.
So I think they're less likely to do that. I think Channel 4 did a good job. I know Mark Wilson. I think he's a good guy. I think Kyle Amore, again, another person I've worked with, he knows it, and they genuinely seem passionate. So I thought that they did a good job of bringing the game to a different audience. I haven't watched all of it, but I thought their treatment of the grand final was interesting. The way they kind of did that behind the scenes style look at it, and I think that's, you know, that was quite a quirky way of doing things. They were kind of a bit hampered by the fact it came out, I think, a week after, and was at like 8 o'clock in the morning. But you can still watch it on demand, I think. So. Yeah, I think any interest in the game is great, and the kind of more diverse platforms you can get it on, the better, because, you know, we need to try and get as many people watching as possible.
I don't think it was IMG. I think it was when they were talking to the Hearns prior to that about promoting the game. I think what they came back with, saying that rugby league is its stars, but the game doesn't promote them enough. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'd love to see more made of, you know, the freakish talent we've got. Whether it's Jay Field hitting top, or Matty Ashton for that matter, who's English as well. So you know, last year he clocked on like nearly 38 kilometers an hour. On a pitch, which is fantastic, phenomenal, isn't it? And we've got such skillsters, and we've got, you know, really powerful players who can hit hard, and you know, there are loads of you would love to see some, you know, the kind of almost like the star making sort of ramping up of the kind of talent we've got in rugby league. But I mean, how you go about it, I don't know, because I mean, rugby league's really good at kind of criticizing itself. I think if for two events of a year, and if you count Magic Weekend 3 previously, we've had events that have clocked, you know, like at least 50,000 people at a Challenge Cup final, nearish 70 for a grand final. And this is a sport which is played in a kind of narrow band of cities and towns in the north of England, predominantly. Yeah. I know you've got Catalan Dragons further afield and London Broncos this year, but for what we are, I think this should, to some extent, should be more celebrated as well. I think if you do your product down, a bit like, you know, Gerald Ratner sort of in the 80s with this, you know, kind of my
selling people
crap, you know, kind of you tell people it's crap, then what are you going to do? I think everyone's so proud of the sport, everyone wants it. But everyone wants it to be successful. But I think sometimes the habit formed is to be critical about how we could do it better. And it's like, let's celebrate some of the stuff, and then people almost go, oh yeah, fair play, yeah, you did get, you know, you do have an annual event which attracts 60,000 people, and you know, the World Cup showed that people from around, not from heartland areas, buy tickets for things. So, you know, if we there are things to celebrate. That's not to say that we should just blasé sort of ignore all the flaws, but I think sometimes if we were a bit more celebratory, then people might join in the celebrations, if you get me. So
yes, be positive and as I say, celebrate the positives. All right. Time's running down, Matt. It's flew by us here. It's been some really interesting insights and information you've given us. So bring it to a close now and just say what's your hopes, what's your ambitions, what's your thoughts on 2024, which is going to be a big year for the game. Just to finish off with, really.
I'd really like England to find or the Rugby Football League and obviously somehow find. And obviously an alternative to the Samoa test series. Because, I mean, as much as I've just said, we should celebrate things. The one thing I was really disappointed about was the fact that Samoa are no longer coming. And that my little fear is that now that the Southern Hemisphere teams have got an international competition that suits them, that they won't feel the need to come north again. Yeah, and yeah, I think Tonga's... Yeah, that is the one thing that does worry me, is that at the moment we're the only... kind of tier one nation in the Northern Hemisphere, and we haven't got anybody looking like they're going to emerge as a tier one nation. Yeah. So hopefully the RFL can find an alternative to that. I know like the Exiles and the Combined All-Stars have been panned a little bit over the, you know, but we do have some quality non-English and non-British players in the competition. Maybe, you know, maybe if we can get some buy-in, there is a decent team, there is a decent test to be had there, even if it doesn't count as a proper test. I think, you know, again, we had a really good season across the board, I thought, last year. I mean, I know League One's has had a few problems in terms of teams, you know, withdrawing from the competition. Hopefully some of those things will sort out. I'd like to see Cornwall continue their progress. I thought that was a bright spot for the game. I know it's a tough one for those clubs kind of down in League One geographically, but I think Cornwall are trying to make it work, and you have to say fair play to, you know, those teams in the third tier. They've not complained. So, you know, another good season in the Championship. I know it was a little bit kind of runaway, but then London Broncos came out of the pack and showed that you can achieve success if you get things right on the field and you get things right in terms of your pathways and your sustain. I mean, like what we were saying before about Thunder, I mean, London are a great example of that. I don't think they had there was a big stat, wasn't there? They didn't have a Northern player in their ranks. Yeah, they had Corey North from Australia, who must be on some whack, but they didn't have a Northerner in their team. Dean Farre's in there as well, isn't he? So, yeah, I think we set a high bar in terms of the quality last year for the competition. So my hope would just be that, we go from strength to strength. I mean, Magic Weekend will be interesting to see what happens, but I'm glad that they moved the Challenge Cup final. I mean, last year, I think, what were we on? I think we were on maybe on Sports Extra or maybe was it online, but trying to get at times the focal point, you know, kind of interesting stuff when it's clashing with other competitions is really difficult. Whereas if it's a June Challenge Cup final, there shouldn't be there's much less in the calendar, and hopefully it will sing a bit more. So that's my hope, that we have a good season on the field like we did this year, and we try and get as much
build on things. Yeah, brilliant. Very good, Matt. Well, time's just about to beat this. It's been absolutely marvellous. Some really interesting and informative comments there from you. On behalf of the Whitehaven Rugby League Supporters Trust in Haven, I'd like to thank you for joining us. Wish you all the best. Have a good Christmas, a good new year, and we look forward to hearing from you in 2024, calling the games again on the BBC. So great to speak to you, Matt. Thanks very much. And
cheers, Matt.
Bye. Yeah, thanks for both having me on. Yeah, it's been a pleasure chatting to you. Anytime I can talk about rugby league with people, especially living where I do, it's always welcome. So yeah, pleasure.
Cheers now. Thanks, cheers, Matt.
Cheers, lads. Ah, good stuff. I enjoyed that.
Well, folks, that's all for another episode of Haven Rugby League Fans Podcast. Produced by Trust in Haven, the Whitehaven Rugby League Independent Supporters Trust. Hope you enjoyed it and will join us for our next podcast. To find out more, visit our website at trust in haven.com.